All right, thank you for tuning in again to the Ramilly Matters podcast. I'm your host, Ishmael Sistrunk, the Executive Director of Communications. And with me today, I have a new face in the view. We have Dr. Cedric Gerald, the new principal of Westview Middle School. Dr. Gerald, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
No, anytime, especially with our new faces. We know that the community is eager to learn about Dr. Gerald. We sent out information when you were hired, but I know people are chomping at the bit to get to know the new leader. So in your own words, tell us, who is Dr. Cedric Gerald?
I am a family person. I'm a big brother, a son, a nephew. I grew up in rural North Carolina on my grandparents' farm. And so at an early age, I understood the importance of family, faith, and hard work. And with that came the expectation that, you know, we got an education, right? Because my grandparents were not what you would call educated, but they understood the importance of it. And so being entrepreneurs in their own right, as farmers and running that small farm there in rural North Carolina, that was a foundation for me to then go on to college and, you know, up through my doctoral studies, and so just being able to take those family values, a strong work ethic, and being able to support a community, right? Because it's bigger than just the school, right? It's about the community. And so what you get from me as a principal is someone who really does want to help strengthen the community through preparing my scholars to be the best that they can absolutely be and ultimately improve their quality of life. And so that's just the short rundown of, you know, my values. And I try to be intentional about that.
Okay, that's awesome. So you grew up on a small farm. Tell us a little bit about that experience, because I'm sure that for some of our scholars and some of our community members, you know, we're a city. St. Louis isn't a huge city, but right. it's a city environment.
Sure.
So what was it like growing up on a farm?
Believe it or not, I did not know just how sheltered I was. So, for example, there were many things that I discovered later on in life because we were very sheltered. We were very self-sufficient. My grandparents didn't have to do much outside of the things that we grew right there on the farm. And so, for example, whereas other kids in the community were spending their time, you know, maybe off traveling in the summertime or at the different camps. Camp for me was 4-H camp and Vacation Bible School.
Okay.
And, you know, some of my older cousins went to Upward Bound. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I knew that my summers were going to be spent in my grandfather's tobacco fields.
Okay.
And so my grandfather was a big tobacco farmer. And so I learned how to drive, actually driving my grandfather's tractor Wow. in the tobacco fields of North Carolina. And it was very clear, don't run over my tobacco. but it was hard work, again. And so that's where my work ethic was established. And it to me was, I guess, the fuel for not necessarily wanting to get off of the farm, but definitely seeing my older cousins go off to college and aspiring to follow in their footsteps. When I got of age and I started being able to explore those opportunities, you know, through programs like, you know, Trio Upward Bound and 4-H Camp, really learning about who I was, discovering who I was as a learner. Those things are important. And so it was really about discovery, right? Like, mm-hmm. who am I? What do I value? Who am I in relation to the people that I interact with? And so all of those things that make us a community, right? I watch my grandmother, for example, sit in the front room with other ladies in the community, my aunts, her sisters, her cousins, and quilt on a wooden frame. And, you know, they made those quilts that were, as we would call, everyday use, right? And so I have a quilt, for example, in my home today that my grandmother made. And so all of those things, again, it's just those that life instilled in me the values. Now, were we perfect? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. We were not perfect, but there was just an expectation that you did your best and that you treated other people the way you wanted to be treated. And at the end of the day, that was a belief, or there was a belief that if you just tried to do the right thing, mm-hmm. that somehow or another, the odds would always kind of be in your favor.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, what was your schooling like, your education? Did you go to a public school?
I did go to a public school, and I'm a proud product of a public school there in my hometown. It's a little rural town. It's called Orem. But the neighboring municipality or town was Proctorville. And so I went to Proctorville Elementary School.
Okay.
And at that time, I was in school where two of my grandfather's sisters were teachers.
Okay.
So my great aunt Aquila and my great aunt Molly were teachers in my elementary school. And then one of my aunts by marriage, my aunt Ann, was also a teacher in that school. And so in the country, it was a little different because if you got in trouble in school, they would beat the school bus to my grandparents' house. And so not only did we kind of get the heat in school, but we got the heat by the time we got home. My aunt's black Impala was already in the yard and she was telling everything. And so, you know, you couldn't get in trouble. You know, there weren't many opportunities because
three or four layers there.
Yeah. So, you know, you just kind of had to toe the line, so to speak. But, you know, just going to school there and just, you know, seeing them, you know, certainly as role models. And then I'm a third generation educator because, as I said, my great aunts were educators. And then I had several aunts, an aunt who was near and dear to me. My aunt Valeda Grimes, who recently passed away to cancer, you know, just having her as an image or as a model of success.
Right.
Public schools, public colleges, you know, with that public education came a knowledge and awareness of HBCUs. We're a large HBCU family. Okay. North Carolina has a large concentration of HBCUs. I attended North Carolina A&T State Universities, where I received my bachelor's degree and then went through a teacher cohort program and received my teacher certification at Livingstone College, which is a private HBCU in North Carolina. Later on, I was fortunate enough to attend Elizabeth City State University, which is where I received my Master's of School Administration. And so just understanding the importance of not only the college experience, but the HBCU experience is something that I value greatly. And so when I arrived here at St. Louis in 2016, one of the first questions I asked was, where are the HBCUs, right? I wanted to know where those HBCUs were because it was those kinds of experiences that helped me to, or served as a catalyst, if you would, in my professional career. Because all of those things that I learned about self-advocacy, being a part of a group of intelligent, aspiring young people on those college campuses, you know, it came with a sense of pride. Like, we knew that as Aggies that we were going to be prepared to go anywhere in this world, anywhere in the country, mm-hmm. And lead and learn and work and grow and inspire people in all walks of life. And so that became a big part of my educational philosophy, the things that I saw happening on those HBCU campuses. And I just can't, there are just no words that I can really use, I guess. HBCUs, in my opinion, are just a national treasure, period. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I don't have anything against, I wouldn't take anything away from
right.
other institutions or predominantly white institutions or universities. But what I know for sure in terms of my reach in my community and, you know, black and brown boys and girls who look like me and my siblings and my family members, that HBCU education has just been invaluable.
Awesome. And you said North Carolina A&T State. What city is that in?
That's in Greensboro.
Okay.
Greensboro, North Carolina. It's actually the home of where the sit-in movements began. So if you've ever heard anything about the, they call them the Greensboro Four, but we like to call them the A&T Four. That's when, you know, these four college young men sat down at a Woolworth counter and decided that they were going to be served at that all-white lunch counter in the Woolworth there in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Right.
And it spurred the sit-in movements on college campuses all across this country. And so, again, there's a lot of history
right.
there on the campus of North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University. And on a personal note, my grandmother actually delivered seminars there okay. as a homemaker as part of the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Services.
Okay.
And so I have clips of her that were featured in an Ebony magazine back in 1965 of her
awesome.
Actually delivering some of those seminars about what it meant to be a homemaker
okay.
As a African-American woman in this country. Yeah.
Awesome. That's a black history lesson right there.
Yeah.
Educate
yeah, yeah,
folks.
Yeah.
I actually went to North Carolina A&T State this summer for their graduation. One of my cousins graduated from there this year. So that was my first time going to North Carolina. Flew into Charlotte, drove down to Greensboro for that celebration.
Yeah.
So shout out to the Aggies.
Aggie pride. That's what we say. We also have what they call the greatest homecoming on earth.
Okay.
It's right there at North Carolina A&T.
Okay. Now, what brought you from North Carolina to St. Louis? You said you came in 2016. What brought you here?
Yeah. So in total transparency, you know, I had worked for an educational leader there in North Carolina, and the opportunity came open to be the principal of a large comprehensive high school in the Ferguson-Florissant School District. I applied, got the opportunity to come up here and lead the work there in that school. And I say this with all due respect and the utmost humility. It was post-Michael Brown, right? Like, mm-hmm. I was in North Carolina when the Michael Brown incident took place. And, you know, there are a lot of schools of thought around, you know, the details or the events of that day leading up to his death, right?
Right.
But seeing that happen and watching it on national media outlets,
right?
Wondering, you know, what could have been done differently to prevent his tragic death, right? And just knowing that I would have the opportunity to come and work in a community where the young people were very much acquainted with what happened on that day, you know, and the students and the families in North County, but more specifically, you know, right there on South New Florissant, and just the fact that it runs right into the heart of Ferguson. That's one of the first things I wanted to see,
mm-hmm.
right? Because right. I wanted to have that as this constant reminder of the importance of doing your best, right? Because listen, you know, people say, you know, a lot of things, but when you do your best, like when you just, if you just do your best, and I'll be honest with you, that's the best that I can offer anybody,
right.
anywhere, is that, you know, when I show up, I'm going to do my best. I will do my best to deliver on whatever promise or expectation you have for me. And so when I came here in 2016, that's what I was coming to do, to try to do my part or my fair share in impacting a community that we saw characterized one way, and then just getting here and being in that community for over 6 years or upwards of 6 years, and seeing that what I know for sure, there are amazing scholars in North County.
Right.
There are amazing families in North County.
Absolutely.
Debunking the myth that African-American parents don't care about their kids. And so seeing that as a high school in a comprehensive setting, you know, that's what brought me here. And believe it or not, the children in North County are what have kept me here, and seeing their potential. Could I go home and do the work? Sure. You know, the people in my hometown love me, and I love my people everywhere. But, you know, just knowing that I can have an impact in a community where so many of the young people have been marginalized and disenfranchised, it's important. This is the best hard work I've ever done, put it like that.
Well, it's definitely going to be hard work, as I'm sure you're aware. We can name the school. You were at McClure High School, right?
Yep, I was, yep.
And so you're still in the same community. That's a hop, a skip, and a jump away.
That's right.
Ferguson, of course, is part of Ferguson, is Ferguson-Florissant School District. Part of it is Riverview Garden School District. And so it is a small community in a sense where, you know, everybody sort of went through those same things, especially during the Mike Brown situation. So during that time, I actually was working at the St. Louis American newspaper, Black weekly newspaper here. And I saw that national media that you talked about that came in, and a lot of them had, you know, a specific thought about what Ferguson was, a specific narrative of what they thought Ferguson was that didn't necessarily reflect what people who are from here know, you know, about this community. And so, and that impacted all of us, you know, in different
sure.
ways. I wasn't here in the district at the time, but I know that, you know, our district leaders and administrators and teachers and principals and students
sure.
were going down, you know, to that area after it happened and talking to students. And a lot of our students were directly impacted from that.
Sure.
And so it's amazing that you saw that and said, let me go and see what assistance that I can be. Let me go and pour into this community where some other people were saying, hey, let me run away, or let's yeah. get away from that.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. And so now you've come to Riverview Garden School District.
Yeah.
You're the principal yeah. of Westview Middle School.
Right.
And, you know, just to be transparent and upfront, because I try to just be honest and forthcoming with the community. Westview, we had some challenges last year, and I'm sure that you are well aware that Westview, you know, we had our two media stories that went really, really viral. And we had a lot of positive media coverage with Precious Berry getting so many awards and going to UMSL with a lot of our leaders and our teachers, that we had great features. But the two that went crazy in the media were both from Westview Middle. And so I know there are parents that were part of some of those situations or witnessed some of those situations that say, what are we going to do with Westview? How can we improve Westview? So as the principal, that's what you're tasked with. We're all working for the same goal. But what changes can you bring to Westview Middle, or what things are you looking to implement that you think parents will see?
So it's real interesting that you should ask me that question, because I certainly had no idea that I would be here in this space. And so that's why these conversations that you're having. So I just want to thank you for having this conversation with myself and others, because these conversations are important, right? Because I realize that I have to earn the trust of this community. You know, people may respect you because of your title, but that doesn't necessarily mean they trust you. And so I'm up for that challenge as well. And so for me, walking into Westview, I've said it, it's a dream job for me because children of color are affective learners. They have to believe that you see and care about who they are as people, right, as a person. And they want to know that, you know, that they matter to you. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's easy because I am the uncle to, I have, you know, sisters who have primarily boys. And going home and seeing them, it's real easy for me to walk into a school despite those kinds of challenges because I'm the uncle to nephews,
right,
who have some of those challenges.
Right.
But they need leaders in their buildings to care about them and hold them accountable. And so there's a duality to walking into a school that has had challenges and being able to both nurture and care about those young scholars and hold them accountable for the expectations that have been set forth, right, for them to absolutely live up to their potential. And the easy part for me is because I already believe,
right,
that they have that potential. No, nobody has to sell me on the notion,
right,
that they're smart or that they're brilliant or that they will be the next doctors and lawyers and leaders in our community. And so they don't have to convince me of that.
Right.
I'm walking in the door and believing in their ability at face value. Same thing for those educators in that building, right? And so that's what I'm going to say, it's my dream job. They don't have to convince me that with supportive leadership, they know what it does, or what it means, excuse me, to educate those young people, those scholars in that building. And so I just believe that together we're going to have the kind of synergy that will propel us to the front. Now, if I don't believe that as the principal,
right,
then the teachers and the children and everybody else connected to the school, they don't have a chance in the world, right?
Right.
If as the principal, I don't believe that the half has never been told, so to speak, that we had a chapter in our story at Westview last year, and this is our opportunity to write a new chapter.
Right.
And so I'm encouraging people to forget about what has been and explore the possibilities of what might be when we work together and we focus on what matters. And so I've placed things sort of in two big buckets in my mind to help me make sense of the work that we have to do there. It's safety, relationships, teaching, and learning. And I use those four buckets because more than anything, I want our school to be safe.
Right.
And so at times I realize I'll be pushing to make sure that we're doing the right thing. And sometimes I'll be pulling. And that push and pull is the space where we build relationships.
Right.
Because they don't know me. You know, an aha for me, and nobody had to tell me this, was that my eighth graders will have had three principals. They came as sixth graders and they had a principal. They had a principal last year as seventh graders, and I will be their third principal in 3 years as they are eighth graders. And so I've been hyper intentional, super intentional about making sure that I put supports and systems and structures in place so that when they walk into the door returning in August on the 21st, that they know and feel a sense of intentionality around what was going to happen for them as eighth graders as they transition to the high school. And so, yeah, we had our challenges, but we aren't going to harp on it. We don't actually, with all due respect, we don't have time because, for example, those eighth graders have to be ready to go up to the high school up there with Principal Nave because she's doing amazing things up there. You talked about, I think Ms. Berry, her last name is
Precious Berry.
Precious Berry. I was able to be in a space with her. And just when I say forgetting what has been and exploring the possibilities of what might be, what might it look like if every student that came through Westview was able to go to the high school and be an image of or have some semblance of success that Miss Berry had?
Right. And she's a Westview. She came out of Westview.
You understand what I'm saying? And so what we have to do is work to replicate the Berry experience. And, you know, I've not heard anybody say that, but, you know, I just coined that phrase, the Berry experience. Like, we want to give every student the Berry experience. Like, what supports, what people, what conversations, what ways of being and habits of mind had to be in place for Miss Berry to get to where she is. And we want to replicate that so that every scholar who comes to Westview. And so I'm going to need parent support. I'm going to lead them to lean into the discomfort. You know, when I call you and I say that, you know, your scholar is not being his best today, you know, I'm going to need your support because while the conversation may be about a consequence as a result of a certain behavior, the reality is we can't stay in that cycle. We can't stay in that acting out cycle. We can't stay in that way that wasn't necessarily conducive for school. And so we're putting some things in place. For example, we're working on our universal matrix that says, you know, at Westview, this is what a sixth grader does. This is what a seventh grader does. This is what an eighth grader does, you know, as a part of this community. And just working with my new assistant principals, I have an amazing new team coming on board, some talent from this district, right? People who have been in this district, and then myself, like you said, just being down the road. And so, you know, that I think what it boils down to for me more than anything is earning the trust of this community.
Right.
And just the significance of having, you know, talent of color, scholars of color, and then all of our allies who don't look like us or who are not of color, who get it and understand the importance of making sure that we have safe, equitable schools for our scholars.
Safe, equitable schools. That, excuse me, that is very important. And it's interesting. So we talked to, as I mentioned, Warren Newton, Director of Safety and Security. And he talked from a security perspective about a lot of the things that you're mentioning, about how important it is to build those relationships with the scholars and staff members to help to keep people safe, and just caring about the kids, showing that compassion before you necessarily try to go and correct behavior. Because if scholars don't know that you care about them, they're going to be less likely to listen or to try to follow the guidance that you're giving them.
For sure.
And so I definitely appreciate you joining the podcast because that is a step in the parents in the community getting to know you. Because as the leader of that building, you're a leader in the community, you know, and you have been already, but people are really going to look to you to follow your lead. And so definitely appreciative of that standard that you're looking to set, of that team that you're building, and of the ability to model the things you talked about for those students. Because a big part is showing those expectations, showing that confidence that you know that they can meet them, you know, and then just putting that plan in place.
For sure.
So anything else that you'd like to share with the community about this upcoming school year that I haven't asked you about?
Just thank you for this opportunity to serve in this community. And just, you know, thank you for entrusting me with a place where, you know, I believe will be amazing for our young scholars. Give me an opportunity to show you who I am and hold me accountable, you know, for building those relationships. I know that I'll have some missteps on this journey, but I'm okay saying I apologize and I didn't mean to offend you or I didn't mean to, you know, hurt your feelings. And that goes back to that core that my grandparents and my mom and my aunts and my uncles and my older cousins all instilled in me as role models. You know, I'll say this. I was fortunate to have amazing role models in my life. And I come from a blended family. But what I know for sure is when you care about people, like when you really, really care about people, and it's not your intent to harm them, that somewhere in the mix that will surface. And that's the hard work that we have to do. Like, we alluded to the hard work,
right?
But I am very in tune to the heart work that has to happen as well. And so I try to find that balance between the hard work and the heart work. And I will tell you, if I have a flaw, if I have an Achilles heel, it is that sometimes I lean too far into the heart work. Gotcha. Because I want to know the story.
Right.
And I try to take time to find out the story before I make a decision about what will happen with a child or a scholar who may or may not be living up to their expectation. You know, briefly, there are two dichotomies that exist. There are students who will show up in my office, and they will show up in my office because they did something amazing. And we're preparing for some type of celebration, whether it's Junior Honor Society or eighth grade transition program or ceremony, or a scholar who has not necessarily done something that they should have done, or in some way or another, if we would gone against the social norms that we've set in the building. But what I know for sure is that I am responsible for what does or does not happen in that building.
Right.
And I just want this community to know that I take that responsibility very seriously. And so when I'm making decisions, I'm making decisions based on that deep sense of responsibility that I have for what happens in that building and what happens to the people in that building. And that includes everybody.
Right.
I'm not there to serve just the children. While they are at the core of that learning organization, I want everybody to be safe and right. ultimately have a good day at work. The teacher assistant, the instructional assistant, the coach, the office professionals, the custodians, the cafeteria, the bus drivers, SROs, the DSOs, everybody. I have a responsibility to make sure that they can come and learn and work in a safe environment. And so the decisions that I'll make will be premier in making that happen. You know, we can't, for example, we can't ensure the safety of a scholar if we are out in the lobby or in the office behind closed doors having disagreements about things that we can come to the table and agree upon, you know, again, at a universal level. Like, students have an expectation that they will come to school in dress code. That's not something we should be fighting about.
if we believe that that's going to help keep our schools safe, then I need the community to get behind us, get behind the district, get behind me, and at the universal level, send the scholar to school in uniform every day so that we don't have to spend our time pulling in two different directions around that when they should be getting educated. You know, we're coming online with yonder pouches. Same thing. It's an agreed upon district expectation that if you're a student, if you're a scholar in this district, that you will put your cell phone. Why? Because we know that those cell phones have contributed to unsafe things in our schools and unsafe narratives about our schools. And so if we know that, then we have to come to school. We have to send our scholars to school ready and willing to come in line or come on board with those things that will very quickly help us to shift our focus to teaching and learning. And that's what we have to do. That's what we have to be about every day. Everybody, every day has to come to school ready to teach and ready to learn. And I want to be on the right side of that.
Right. Well, that, that is true. That's impactful. It all comes down to teaching and learning and safety, as you mentioned. And so a lot of those initiatives that are put in place, we have conversation with the community. We have conversation with the students as these plans are being implemented. And I think that's definitely something that we will continue because if you don't have that, that parental community scholar input, then you have a little more of that struggle with it. But those opportunities are given. So we definitely encourage our scholars, you know, take those opportunities to share your voice. I'm sure that you, you and your team will listen to the scholars when they have concerns. We do district level surveys to students, to staff, to parents. So make sure you're sharing those voices so that you have input into the decisions. And then when the decisions are made and when the policies are set and when the procedures are set, help us. Because the more that we can focus on that education piece, then the better that our scholars will do.
Absolutely.
So thank you for your time. Now, I do know, so we talked about you as an educator, as a person, right before we started podcasting. Now, you showed off some talents as a singer, as a vocalist. Now, do you want to bless the community? Do you want to show off or do you want to keep that in-house?
Listen, I will just say this. You know, I enjoy singing. I'm a member of a faith-based community here in St. Louis, Shiloh Temple, Church of God in Christ. It's one of the things that's actually kept me here. And so if you Google my church, you'll see me singing some tunes or they call them sermonic selections. You know, we think about Sister Act. You ever seen the movie Sister Act?
Mm-hmm.
And you got Whitney Houston. Not Whitney Houston. Oh, God, that's a Freudian slip. Goldberg. I love Whitney. I love Whitney. But you got Whoopi Goldberg in there, and, you know, she's a undercover nun or undercover headliner, actually, but deviling as a nun, and she's in there with the kids, and they were giving her a fit at first, you know. But that movie is a great example of, you know, students don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Exactly. Right?
And when they realize how much she cared about them. I mean, she had this little skit, you know, and she said, if you want to be somebody, if you want to go somewhere, you better wake up and pay attention. And, you know, and that's enough. So, you know, that'll be my parting words. You know what I'm saying? We have to wake up and, you know, pay attention. But more importantly, instill those values in our students and wake up and show up. Show up. I don't miss work. So my kids can count on me every day to wake up and show up. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you again. We're here with Dr. Cedric Gerald, the principal of Westview Middle School. And this is a Ramley Matters podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share, especially to the Westview community, because we know that the community is interested to meet Dr. Gerald. And school, of course, is right around the corner.
Yeah.
August 21st, I believe, is that first day of school. So get ready. You'll meet Dr. Gerald. We have back to school bash coming up. So make sure you come out. Make sure you're registered for school. And we will see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.